Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There's my dude.
Dude, what's going on?
I'm all right, man. How you doing?
Man, I'm great. I'm great. Just, just got out of the shower after 7 days. It's all good.
You're washing off the cobwebs from the studio.
I'm washing off the quarantine cobwebs in the studio and, from the haunted farmhouse down here. Yeah,
I've got a bone to pick with you, John Fred, before we go any further. Serious bone to pick with you.
All right, pick it.
Last time I saw you was in Camden Town, and I was DJing at the World's End, and you were on a night out on the town, cutting loose.
wait. Say that one more time.
You were out in Camden. The night before you guys were set to headline Ramblin' Man.
Yeah.
And I was DJing in the bar you were in, the World's End, and we were catching up, we were having a drink, having a good time. And then you played Ramblin' Man the next day. I didn't get to make it down to Ramblin' Man the next day because I had to DJ again, and yeah, I just couldn't get the night off. But I made it down to Ramblin' Man on the Sunday. And when I arrived on the Sunday, every single person that I saw said, "What the hell did you do to John Fred on the Friday night?" Because come Saturday, he was like head down, backstage area, just not talking to anyone, hungover, a wreck. And apparently it was all your fault. And I was like, "What?"
Oh,
he's throwing me under the bus.
we had a marvelous time. And I tell you, that was a great night. I'll cherish that and remember that for the rest of my life. I'll tell you though, I did. I woke up.
Were you feeling pretty special the next day? Were you?
Listen, man, I'm telling you, that's one of the worst hangovers I've ever had in my life. And I'll tell you what. What's funny is
all of it.
So I got home from that tour. Have not had a drink since that tour.
Really?
Completely sober. Yeah.
And that's like almost a year now.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. I lost about 15 pounds, and I was feeling great. And then we started quarantining, and then I started eating bread and snacks and cookies and cakes, and I've gained it all back. So,
wow.
Yeah.
So
you start hitting the gym, dude.
Are you sort of teetotal now then? Where are you at with alcohol? What's the vibe?
Well, so... Yeah, so pretty much since that tour, I was like, man, you know what? I got home and I quit, man, for good. And it's crazy because now the funny thing about not drinking is, you know, when you're drinking, you know, you got this like kind of like anything that's bothering you or anything like that, you know, it numbs, and obviously you shouldn't drink when you have something bothering you. You should always talk about it and, you know, feel like you can get that off your chest. But when you're in my case, I was going through some stuff, and so instead of being a professional responsible adult, I was just dealing with it with knocking back some beers. And
right. I'd never seen you, if I could be so bold, I'd never seen you, like, you know, we've partied loads before in the past and had nights where we're drinking and cutting loose and stuff, but I'd never seen you like that wasted before, and it wasn't like a side of John that I was familiar with. Not like you didn't seem to be too dark, but you just didn't seem to be the guy that I knew, if that makes sense.
No, and I wasn't, and it's crazy because I've never had a a drinking problem ever in my life. And but you know, that this past summer I had some I was going through some stuff, you know, and I think everybody pretty much knows me as, you know, like this super big, happy, positive, huggy dude. And
I mean you're Mr. Sunshine. You're the guy that brings the light and the laughter.
And you know what, I appreciate that. And because that's how I want to be all the time. And I think that,
I guess when that's expected of you, though, it can be difficult, right? Sometimes when you're not feeling that, to put on the show and be that guy that you feel like people want you to be.
Sure, absolutely. You know, it's tough sometimes too, because you know, I've always, since day one, you know, I've never been the guy that had anything, you know, that was bothering him. I'd always, you know, shake it off. But no, I think that as human beings, we go through things, and we kind of, I think, I don't know if it's something that we have in our DNA. It's like I can take care of it by myself type thing. But I think there's a point where you go, oh man, you know, you don't realize it when you're in the forest, but then when you back up, you know, you can't, that old saying, you can't see the trees for the forest, you know, and I think that's where I was at. And my wife just sent me down and she's like, you know, hey, look, you're not doing the right thing. You're not dealing with the stress the right way. And I'm like, whoa. I'm like, wow. And it was like a big shot of clarity in my you know, face, a big slap of, hey buddy, you know, you gotta, you know, not be a derelict. You know? So I was like, okay. Well, I told her right there, sitting at the Cheesecake Factory. I said, okay, look, I'm not going to drink anymore. You know? And she was like, okay, all right. Good for you. Uh-huh. It's like, I don't know. It's like maybe going on 7-8 months now. So yeah, man, it's great. I'll tell you one thing about it though.
Good for you, dude.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Which I'm and you know, dude, it's like I told my band guys too, you know, Chris, John, Ben, I'm like, don't feel like you guys can't, you know, drink around me. I have nothing against alcohol. Hell, it's a wonderful thing. But I think for me, it was something that, you know, I just had to kind of cut out at an early age. And I look at all these guys, man, that are, you know, legends that we looked up to, and I'm like, golly, man, there was a, which I, to be honest with you, I've never taken a hard drug in my life. I've always been drug free. I mean, you know, maybe some stuff that grew from the ground, but I mean, you know, as far as
chemicals, you know, and narcotics and hard stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've always been really, you know, against that stuff, but yeah, the drinking, it's funny because drinking is, it's one of those things that it slips up on you without you knowing it because it's so socially accepted.
Yeah,
you know?
Man.
And it's like, oh man, you know, it's alcohol. You can go buy it down the street. So then you kind of got this thing of like, well, you know, if I'm responsible, if I'm not driving, which I never, ever did that, you know, and I'm not putting anybody in harm's way, then it's, you know, I'm being professional and responsible about it. But then you go, wait a minute, man, this is some stuff I'm dealing with, you know, and I'm masking it with alcohol. So, but I'll tell you what it does do when you're laying in bed and now, you know, which I mean, you know, probably ever since I was, you know, 15 or 16 years old, you know, like every kid, you know, which you guys start drinking, you know, at like what, 15 or 16 in England, and over here, it's
if not sooner, mate.
Yeah, right. The baby bottle. But, you know, it's one of those things where every kid, you know, grows up sneaking some drinks. But yeah, I never really, never ever had a situation where I was using it to cover up, you know, my situation I was going through. So
yeah,
man, I totally said, I said hell with it, and I feel great. But I tell you what, when you go to sleep at night, the only thing now that drives me nuts is my brain will not shut off. So
I know that feeling.
Yeah, you know, I'm trying to come, you know, I'm always running like, oh man, I need to start this business, or I need to do this, or I need to get up and practice, you know, drums at 3 o'clock in the morning. So,
because your productivity levels shoot through the roof, don't they? And if you're like somebody who's very overactive anyway, you're like, wow, I've got all this energy. There's no hangover cloud in me. I'm ready to go. But then I think, as you say, the hard thing is then learning when to switch off and chill out.
That's it. And two, I don't guess it helps now that, like, I've always been a coffee fan, right? So, I mean, like, you know, pretty much you know,
you're surely a man that doesn't need coffee, John.
I've got two little girls.
Yeah.
And I've actually got one on the way that's due in July.
Oh, so wow. You've got number three on the way.
Yeah, man. Another little girl, too. So yeah, I've kind of turned over a new leaf, man. Trying to get in shape and stay active. And it's, you know, with everything going on in the world now, it's kind of like, man, dude, you're for the first time in my life since probably, you know, 20, 21 years old when we first started touring, I've had this time at home where I haven't had this before. And it's crazy, man, where, you know, now I'm like, oh my gosh, I got all this time and all these projects I wanted to do. So I'm trying to put a lot of my effort into, you know, working harder at being active on social media. I know it sounds so weird, you know, but I mean, that's kind of the time we're in. And so I'm putting a lot more effort into my craft, you know, just trading the time that, you know, I guess we would be touring, obviously, you know, into, you know, shedding at the house, if you would, you know, wood shedding.
Yeah, I get it. Well, what a great unexpected turn in the conversation, and I'm loving it. Let's come back and let's talk some more in a bit. Let's break for the first of your five songs now. This is a dude, right? Every song I've ever heard written by this guy, I've loved, but I've never spent like real time down the rabbit hole getting to know his music. And after listening to this song that you've picked by Jeff Lynne, I think the rest of, you know, my week is going to be spent just checking out everything that this guy has to offer, because he is such an amazing songwriter, isn't he? Such an amazing songwriter. You've picked Lift Me Up as the track. Tell us about, you know, this song, your relationship to it, and why it stands out.
So, for me, Jeff Lynne is one of the, you know, greatest songwriters of all time. To me, really, you know, he was kind of, I mean, obviously George Martin was such a huge instrumental guy with the Beatles, you know, everybody knows that. But I think Jeff, for me, is like, if you could have had a fifth Beatle, he would have been it. I found out about Jeff Lynne when I was about 9 or 10 years old. My dad, Richard, that plays with the Headhunters, he told me, like, I can't remember what we were doing, but we were up in his music room and we were just listening to records. He goes, if you want to, like, hear one of the greatest albums ever written, it's this album right here. And it was Jeff Lynne's Armchair Theater. And this album, it's so 90s, man. It's like Jeff sitting on this big plush armchair on the top of this, you know, rocky cliffside. And I don't know, it could have been somewhere in England, or I don't know, maybe it was in, you know, Malibu or something. But it's crazy because I have the vivid imagery of that album, and I never can get away from that. And I think, like, that's so important when you're discovering music at a young age, and even when you get older too. Because I mean, I discover, you know, stuff all the time that I go, wow, how did I miss this album? You know, much like you with the Jeff stuff, because there's stuff that I, you know, Chris or Ben or John will bring up. They're like, man, you ever heard this record? And I'm like, no, you know, and vice versa. But Jeff's album, Armchair Theater, for me, was such an awesome record. I mean, there's so many great songs on that record. Lift Me Up, I chose because I just remember being a kid and hearing that record in my dad's room, and it was just like, holy cow, man, what a sound. And, like, you know, it's timeless. His stuff is timeless. And all the ELO stuff, I mean, I was pretty bummed, man. Like, he played Nashville, Tennessee, at the big arena down there a couple years ago, and I wanted to go see him, but we were on tour. It was all across the globe, or all across the world tour. And yeah, he's just a monster, man. Anybody that's never heard of Jeff, you know, obviously you've heard of him, you know, you might not have known it, but he's a great artist to listen to. And you know, obviously the stuff he did with the Traveling Wilburys, I mean, that's,
yeah, like, man,
dude, it's timeless stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all about it. This is going to be my week. It's just going to be Jeff Lynne down the rabbit hole all day and night.
There you go.
I'm stoked.
Baby, talk. And all you gotta do is bring it to me, baby. Come on, let's talk about it. Can't seem to do without it. Don't wanna be one of the
Here's what I want to talk to you about, John. Is Kentucky still based? Is that still home for all you guys?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. We all of us still live in Kentucky.
How is it out there at the moment? What's the vibe in your community with everything that's going on?
Well, you know, obviously we're right in the middle of this coronavirus outbreak. And, you know, I'll tell you, man, it's a just like everybody else in the world, it's a weird time to be living in. Mm-hmm. I hate the fact that, you know, there's been a lot of, you know, people lost their lives to this, and it's just tough. But I think, you know, I imagine that every single country and community within, you know, the towns, they're dealing with the same type thing. It's just in different, you know, lights. I mean, for us being out in the country, I think it's wonderful because
the social distancing thing must be a little bit easier, right? Because there's just more open space.
It is. So, I mean, like, you know, for us, we personally, I live on, you know, a farm that my grandparents bought in the 70s. And I bought some land right outside the edge of the farm. So it's great. I mean, we get to get outside and stuff. And it's been pretty weather the last couple of days. So I've got, you know, the girls out there playing and stuff. But it's hard because, you know, my mom and dad will come down and, like, you know, sit at the end of the driveway. And, you know, the kids are on the porch. And it's like they want to go hug, you know, Mimi and Pappy. And they can't do it, you know. And it's heartbreaking. Thank you. And, but I think one thing that for us, I hope people, you know, I think this is going on probably, well, I don't know. You guys may have a better handle on it, I hope. But I think people are not taking this as serious. I know some people are and tons of people are. But I think it's one of those things that maybe if, you know, if people haven't really checked in with the news and you know, obviously there's people that don't. I think that some people are missing the seriousness that this is. You know, they think, yeah, well, you know, there's virus going around, and it's just you know, it's one of those things, just like the flu. And it is, but it's a super duper one, man, and it's
yeah,
it's gonna be taken.
There's over 50,000 deaths already. You know, that's a lot.
It's I never, you know, man, I never thought I would live through a time where we had to you know, have something like this going on. And you know, I'll be honest with you, we're right in the middle. We were right in the middle of making our seventh record. So we were down in the woods. John, you know, our bass player, built a really cool cabin, and he's got such a awesome, you know, collection of gear that he put in there. So we have you know, sidetrack here. We've made one of the best albums I think we've ever made, hands down. And I've always, you know, on records, I'm so proud of every record. I don't want to, you know, have anybody think, well, you know, you make a record and you say that, and then, you know, you always go back and think, well, you know, I could have did this better, or this could have been tighter, or could have had a better, you know, melody here. This is the only record in a long time where all four of us, you know, we actually produced the whole record. So that was really great. I mean, you know, we did after we left Roadrunner in 2015, we did two albums, Kentucky and Family Tree, on the Mascot label group out of Holland. And
are you not with them anymore?
Those records. Do what now?
Are you not with them anymore? Have you moved on?
No, we're still with Mascot.
You're still with Mascot.
This will be our third record with Mascot.
Right, they're
wonderful. Wonderful label. I mean, they really, really been great to work with, because they just let us do us, you know. And
the guy who owns the whole label is like a fan, right? That's the vibe.
Yeah. He's a great friend, and it's really it's nice to be that close to you know, the evil record label. You know, I mean,
yeah,
in
the
our
suit.
Situation,
yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, hey, look, it's great, because, you know, instead of we're at that point in our career now too, where I know it's different from a band just starting out, a young band, because, you know, I remember when we first started, it was, you know, to talk to the record label, you know, even with a record deal, it was kind of like trying to, like, you know, talk to the wizard, you know, behind the curtain. Mm-hmm. And, but now it's, as you progress, you know, you understand that there's still that, you know, kind of, I guess, you know, political system you have to go through, like the steps and all that stuff. But I think now it's kind of like they just know we're a bunch of crazy Kentucky dudes. We're gonna make a badass record and
just let them crack on.
So, yeah, but I'm telling you, man, this record, it is really, really special. I mean, I think too, going through the times we're living in, making this thing, it put a certain pressure on us that we've obviously never experienced before. I mean, you always have the pressure to make a great album, but then this is like, man, we were sitting there, you know, reading these up, like, you know, singing harmonies and you know, making a great rock and roll record, but at the same time, you know, having you know, checking the phone, like, oh gosh, you know, what's going on now? You know, it's kind of like you're in the I don't know, I described it to somebody. I was saying, you know, it's like we're way off in the distance watching this storm coming. You know, if you're watching a tornado coming, and you're just trying to see when it's going to get to you, you know, and that's kind of the way we felt. But I think hopefully, you know, hopefully in a little time, you know, I hope sooner than later, obviously, just like everybody else does, I hope we can kill this thing out and everybody get back to normal life, you know.
Amen to that, dude. Let's break for another song. Your second one is off my favourite Led Zeppelin album. You've actually chosen two songs off this album, so I'm guessing, is it your favourite record too, Houses of the Holy?
Yeah, you know what? When I was a kid...
What a bad boy.
I'll never forget this. So my grandparents, my dad's mom and dad, were pretty rock and roll. So my grandfather was a historian. He was a school teacher for 40 years, and he was one of the most marvelous guys you'd ever meet. So intelligent. But he was not really that big into rock and roll. Like, he played all kinds of, you know, like boogie-woogie piano and stuff like that. And, you know, he was super proud of my dad and my uncle for everything they did in Headhunters. He was super proud of us, you know, the Black Century guys. And my grandmother, she was the rock and roller, though. She was the blues and R&B gal. And I remember – being a kid, and she would have, like, she had this old, like, Casio stereo in her house, and every, like, my uncle lived there, like, until he was 30, because the Headhunters were still touring and stuff, so all his records were still there, you know? It's like a teenager's room, you know, and I'm from the 70s. I'd go in there and pull these records out, and I just remember House of the Holy. I thought, man, this is such a weird album cover. I was probably,
isn't
like,
it?
I don't know, 9 or 10, you know, and I put it on, and I was just like, dude, what is this? Like, what am I listening to? And that was not my first introduction to Zeppelin. Actually, Dad had the box set with the crop circles on it. I think they released that maybe in, like, the 90s. You remember that big square Zeppelin box set that had, like, all the crop circles? So we would listen to that, but I remember Fred, he was the one that had all these albums. So House of the Holy was a great record, and it's hard to pick a bad Led Zeppelin song, dude. I'm obviously a huge John Bonham fan, and I remember when we were, I'll tell you a funny quick story. So when my dad and uncle put the Headhunters together in the 70s, or excuse me, in the 90s, you know, they won, you know, Grammys and had, you know, big, huge, you know, country songs here in America. But before that, they were a band called Itchy Brother, which was a crazy name. But one day my dad called up, you know, Atlantic Records, and because they were huge Zeppelin fans, and he talked to, it was like late one Friday afternoon, he talked to this guy. He said, "Hey, man, we're a band from Kentucky. We got some great songs, and we'd like for somebody to come down and listen to them." And this guy who picked up, he was like, "Oh man, you know, I don't know." And my dad, I guess he laid the big BS line on him and got him to actually come down to the farm here where the old practice house is. They grew up rehearsing there. And so he comes down and he falls in love with their band. He's like, "Oh man, this is like Led Zeppelin from America, but it's totally different too." So they start working on demos, and over the next, you know, 3 or 4 years, they get some really good songs together. And the guy's name was Mitchell, and he worked at Atlantic, and he was he worked with Zeppelin. He was their PR guy for a long time. And so what happened was Mitchell took their demos to Peter Grant, and he was, you know, and he flew over to England, went to the, you know, Peter's house, and I guess Peter listened to it and liked it a lot, and he was like, "Yeah, man, love this band." So they were going to be one of the first American bands to be signed on the Swan Song label, and then obviously, like, everything's going great, and then John Bonham passes away. So everything was just like, it came to a complete halt. So to tell you how crazy that is, you know, the Headhunters could have been, you know, Itchy Brother, this band that, you know, was from the middle of nowhere, rock band. And, you know, because obviously, you know, tragically, Bonham's passing, it changed the course of history. And I remember, you know, Dad was telling me, he's like, "Man," he's like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do?" And Mitchell actually kept in touch, and he moved to Nashville, and he's been my dad's best friend, like absolute brother, ever since those days. And he's like an uncle to me. And so that's like, that's a little rock and roll history right there. He actually managed the Headhunters with my dad for years and years. So it's crazy how something like such a tragedy like that can turn out. But I told Dad, I was like, "Dude, I'm glad, like, that, you know, you kept in touch, because, I mean, you know, he was there for the Headhunters too, you know."
That's a trip, dude. What a great story.
It's a trip, man. I know, it's a trip.
And the song you've gone with, No Quarter, very apocalyptic vibe as well. Slinky little fucking scary number. I love it. Thank you.
know they won't be home tonight. The snow falls hard, and don't you know? The winds of Thor are blowing cold. They're wearing steel that's bright and true.
Oh,
here's a couple of things I wanted to ask, dude. First of all, like, as a father, and your kids are still pretty young, how are they, like, processing what's going on? You mentioned earlier, obviously, it must be heartbreaking for them because they want to give their grandparents a hug and they can't. I mean, how do you try and explain to them what's going on, and how are they, you know, dealing with not being in school and not getting to see their friends? Like, as a dad, how's this situation kind of hit you?
Well, I'll tell you, it's, I think everybody out there that's got kids and their kids are home right now, you know, I think there's a lot of parents that are like, oh man, golly, what do we do? But I think, and we kind of felt that way too, you know, making sure that, you know, obviously she's, our oldest is five, so she's in preschool. And, so yeah, we've got work packets and stuff that the school sent home. And I think that, you know, she's done one page out of like 50, and we're slacking, dude. We're slacking. But I tell you what, we are doing. It's been really cool for me because, like, one of the biggest things with me is I've wanted to make sure that my kids, you know, enjoy music and learn things about music, and not necessarily have to follow in my footsteps or my dad's, you know. But I want to give them the opportunity. So my house is like, you know, it's like a Guitar Center teenager's room that just exploded. I mean, I got stuff laying everywhere. It's kind of like a musician gear hoarder house. So I mean, but they run around and play on, you know, little pianos, and my drums are set up and guitars. So we've had a lot of really good times so far that, you know, we've been able to just kind of, it's the first time in my life I've been able to sit down and, you know, teach my kids like piano chords, you know. So it's my, you know, I've got a 2-year-old, and she's you know, she doesn't obviously know what's going on, but my oldest is, she knows there's a virus going around, and we can't, you know, we can't catch it, and we have to be really careful and wash our hands and stay, you know, stay with just our little, you know, nest here. But I think, you know, what one thing that I'll be honest with you, man, straight up, you know, no gray area with me. During the time that this all started happening, man, I had like three kind of mini emotional breakdowns, and it was just, I think, being a parent and worrying about, like, you know, kids that obviously, like, I'm not sure how it works with you guys over there, but, you know, there's a lot of kids, like, here in the States that they depend on eating, you know, their meals at school. So it was tough, and I was like, you know, I was going to the studio, and I got behind one of our county school buses, and they were, you know, stopping, and I'm like, man, what, school's not in today? And I'm like, that's not, like, what, you know, we got this thing going on. I thought they canceled school, you know. And what it is, they're giving meals to you know, kids, so to make sure that they don't they have, you know, have something to eat. And it just hit me like a ton of bricks, and it broke my heart, and I was just like, oh my gosh. I was like, how, you know, how fortunate are we? You know, and sometimes we overlook stuff like that. And, but I think too, man, it's just, I think we all have to be strong and try to help our neighbors out as much as we can. And I know that's hard because, you know, you say, well, you know, how do I help my neighbor out when I can't even, you know, get 6 feet from them? And, you know, I think the best thing to do if you're comfortable, you know, financially, and you know somebody else isn't, it's like, you know, maybe if you can put on the gas mask, or, you know, one of the, you know, the mask, and go get them some groceries and just drop it off on their porch and knock and, you know, spray it with Lysol and just, you know, say, hey, man, here it is. You know, I think those are stuff that, as long as we're not in a lockdown type state, if people can help out and do stuff like that, I think that's a little sign of hope, you know, because I don't know, it just tore me to pieces thinking about kids in our own county here who, you know, relied on, you know, food from school. And so a big, you know, big props to our school system for having their you know, facilities, their kitchens and stuff still open and running, you know, food on the buses and stuff to kids. So I think that's, it made me really proud. And I know that's going on in a lot of states as well. They're doing those food programs for kids. So I don't know, just dad, it kind of hit me in the heart, man, you know.
I hear you, dude. And I think when people have a, you know, a platform and an ability to help, then, you know, now is the time to step up, isn't it? And be selfless and do what you can for those that aren't as fortunate, or that, you know, perhaps need the help. And some people never want to ask, do they? That's another thing. Like pride, I think, stops people right. sometimes from kind of saying, oh, you know, I could use a little bit of a helping hand here. But there's a lot of cool stuff going on where we are as well. There's been something happening every week at 8 p.m. on a Thursday night. I mean, this is a very little thing and it kind of might seem a bit flippant, but just the idea behind it, I think, is pretty special. And basically what happens is every Thursday at 8 p.m., everybody goes out onto the street or hangs out of their window and claps and cheers for the National Health Service and basically makes noise and shows their appreciation for all the doctors and the nurses and the healthcare workers that are out there, you know, putting themselves at risk to help cure others.
I saw Brian May doing that on his Instagram the other night, and you know, I thought at first I was like, "Dude, that's not the beat, dude. It's boom, boom, boom." You know? Yeah. And then I read, you know, and I was like, "Oh, that's incredible." Because like you said, I mean, there's, you know, but you know, you think you see something like that, and it's you know, it might seem small, but you know, those nurses and doctors and the people that, you know, even the staff at the hospitals, the people that are cleaning, man, you know,
yep.
not,
yep.
You know, you don't have to just have a degree to
of course, yeah, man,
be recognized. Because I mean, like, these people are, well, they're absolutely putting their lives at risk right now. And man, we're in a crazy time. I mean, we really are. And I think the best thing we all can do is, like you said, if you've got a platform and you can help, and you know, you don't have to be famous or you know, rich, you know, and count me out on those two, because I'm not, but you know, if there's something you can do, I mean, there's, you know, anything, if it's just helping your neighbor, because I think on that local level, that's where it starts, you know. I think a lot of people sometimes say, oh man, what can I do, because, you know, I'm, you know,
just
I
a guy, like, yeah, I'm just a person, just an individual, yeah, yeah.
And that's the most special thing you can be, though. That's the most special thing is just to be a human being. And it doesn't matter if you have, you know, if you don't have Instagram or Facebook, if you're just, you know, somebody who can, you know, help, man. It's I think a lot of people are out there who want to help, and they're not sure how, because I think it's we're isolated right now. And you know, Kentucky has our state motto. It's united we stand, divided we fall. And I have lived by that motto my entire life. Like, I actually used to carry a Kentucky state flag in my travel bag everywhere I went. I was so proud to be a Kentuckian, still am. And but man, it's hard looking at that motto right now and reading it, because it's like, man, we, you know, united we stand. We can't stand 6 feet from each other, you know. But I think metaphorically, you know, it applies, because, you know, we can be united even though we're, you know, physically we can't be right next to each other. I think that the minds and hearts and soul of people worldwide, you know, no matter what, you know, what religion you are, or where, you know, what color your skin is, or where you're from, or anything like that. I think that we've been put back on a level of just all of us being human, no matter what your political party is, no matter, you know, your sexual orientation, anything. It doesn't matter. It's just we're fighting something that's affecting all of us. And I think that we've just got to try to really sit back and you know, just love each other and try absolutely do the best we can, and don't hoard all the damn toilet paper, you know?
Yeah, man. Well, isn't it crazy? Just before this whole thing kicked off, I feel like we were more divided as a species than ever before in human history. And also the Earth was in, you know, complete crisis, more so than ever before. And I feel like both the Earth and the human race needed this almost. We needed it to get us in check and force us to wake up and take a break, have a breath, bury our differences, get together. And if it's a hard, tough situation, and it's only going to get tougher before it gets better, I think, and there's going to be deaths and it's going to be horrible, but I feel like ultimately everything that we're going through is going to make the Earth and humanity, hopefully, you know, better because of it, and stronger and more united and healthier and happier. And we can dream, right? We can hope.
I agree. I mean, I think, you know, I hate this is happening. I mean, I hate that anybody's had to, perish from this, because I know there's tons of you know, people that, you know, for me, I've got a grandmother that's she's got leukemia, and you know, we can't go see her right now, and she just lives right up the road. So I mean, it's tough, and I think that, you know, the biggest thing for all of us, like you said, it's we've been put back to ground zero here with just being humans, you know, and putting all our differences aside, and I think it's, you know, you look at pictures of industries now, and where, you know, you look at over in China, it's like, man, you can, like, I saw a picture the other day of the city, and it's like, I didn't even know that city looked like that from the smog, you know, and it's crazy. I think the biggest thing, man, is just really understanding that this thing doesn't just affect old people. Elderly. It affects everybody, and yeah. I think that was probably the misconception early on.
Yeah,
you know, as
yeah,
well,
definitely.
You know, you have deaths from the flu and things like that. You know, on a yearly basis, but most of the time it's, correct me if I'm wrong, most of the time it's statistically in the elderly, you know, community, and I think that this thing, it doesn't care, you know, and so I think it's really important for all of us to, you know, isolate ourselves. I know everybody's probably tired of hearing it, but the social distancing thing, I it's important. It really is. And, you know, I was watching, on TV the other night, all these kids that are going to, you know, Florida, going to spring break. And I'm like, golly, I'm like, that's just nuts, man. You mm-hmm. know, I mean, that was
selfish, that was ridiculous. Yeah. And so stupid.
Well, and I think, you know, it's, if I was 21, you know, I think that I would, my parents would probably, you know, beat me, you know, if mm-hmm. I'd even mentioned doing something like that right now. But I think that at that time, probably the kids just didn't realize that, you know, oh my gosh, this is not just an elderly situation where it affects the elderly. It's any age, you know. So, but hopefully, man, if everybody can just for a month and a half, you know, if we can just lock down and stay put in place, you know, I think this it'll be over. You know, we just gotta be responsible, you know.
Eleanor Rigby by the Beatles. What a beautiful song, man. The strings and this.
It's one of my favorites of all time. I mean, I love the Beatles. I grew up, my dad, like, you know, everything musical comes from my dad and uncle. I know people who've interviewed us over the years are probably like, okay, dude, we get it. Yeah. your dad and your uncle are in a huge, you know, country rock band, you know. But it's hard, man. It's hard not to mention these guys because, you know, it's like they really were the guys that influenced us and allowed us to have the old practice house on the farm here and become Blackstone Cherry. You know, without them, without that, without my grandparents, you know, I can tell you, we wouldn't be a band.
I love that. You've always acknowledged that band, and you know? You've always celebrated that, man. And not, you know, so many people forget where they came from. And forget those, you know, early helping hands. And once they're successful, they're like, oh, we've done this all on our own back because we rule. And I find it really refreshing when people like yourself always take that moment to go, here's why we're here. And I'm, you know, forever grateful for that. And I'm still connected to that. And it's a beautiful thing.
Well, thank you, man. I appreciate that. And, you know, it's, we're a different band. I mean, I always compare us to, a jackass in a thoroughbred horse race, because we're not going to finish first. We might not even finish last, but you know, we're definitely going to get there. You know, and
we're definitely going to finish.
We're definitely going to finish. You know, but no, I'll tell you, the Beatles, going back to the Beatles, they were such a huge influence on me personally. Yeah, my dad was a huge John Lennon fan, and I named our my wife and I, we named our daughter Scout. Her first name is McCartney. So
amazing.
I mean, you know, pretty big fans. I love. But Eleanor Rigby for me is like, it's one of the most beautifully arranged songs that, you know, and it's hard, man, because you know, if you have a favorite band, it's hard to pick up a favorite song. I mean, that's just
especially when they're
a
band like the Beatles and they've got so many different sounding songs.
So many, and You know, I'll tell you something. This new album that we just finished last Saturday. So
let's play the song and then let's come back and talk all about that, because that's where I want to go next. So let's drop this track like it's hot, which it is.
Ah, look at all the lonely people. Picks up the rice in the church where a wedding has been. Lives in a dream, waits at the window, wearing the face that she keeps in a jar by the door. Who is it for? All the lonely people. Where do they all come from? All the lonely people. Where do they all belong? Father Mackenzie, writing the words of a sermon that no one will hear. No one comes near, look at him working, darning his socks in the night when there's nobody there. What does he care? All the lonely people, where do they all come from? All the lonely people, where do they all belong? Ah, look at all the lonely people. Ah, look at all the lonely people. Eleanor Rigby died in the church and was buried along with her name. Nobody came. Father Mackenzie, wiping the dirt from his hands as he walks from the grave. No one was saved, all the lonely people. Where do they all come from? All the lonely people. Where do they all belong?
Yeah, dude, you said you just finished it literally a week ago. So it's right there. It's fucking done. It's fresh. It's still hot
it's
out of the
fresh.
Oven.
It's fresh, man. I'll tell you, it's crazy because a little backstory on before we went in the studio. This is so we stopped touring for 2019. Our last show was kind of really cool. We had four Kentucky shows. So we played over in Eastern Kentucky and then up in around Lexington, and then we ended. We did out in Western Kentucky, and then ended in Eastern. And the last show was around like November. I can't even remember now, but it was in November. And I remember Chris was absolutely just struggling to sing, because we, from when Family Tree debuted in April of 2018. Up until November, this last November, we did like, it was over like 300 dates, you know, and that's just, I mean, you know, everybody knows, man, we tour. I mean, that's where we live, that's where we eat and breathe, and our live show is something that we hold very dear to our heart, and we want to make sure that we deliver the best we can. So we're going out there putting blood, sweat, and tears into it, and Chris is just a, you know, man, anybody that knows Chris, he is he's a monster. He's a monster vocalist and the big-hearted guy you'd ever meet. And I think it's one of those things where we just tour so much. He started having trouble the last four or five shows. He's like, guys, my voice is just like, it's shot, you know. And, you know, we were all feeling it, you know. We were just like, oh, worn out. But we were kind of worried about Chris. And so when we got home, he went to a great buddy of ours, local guy, ear, nose, and throat doctor, and he said, man, you got a callus on your vocal cord, you know. And so Chris was kind of worried, and you know, the doc told him, he's like, look, man, he said, I operate on these all the time, you know, this is not a big thing, we'll get you an outpatient, get you you know, right back to singing. So he went in and had the surgery, and you know, it was, dude, like for 2 weeks, like he couldn't talk for a week, and he couldn't sing for 2 weeks. So so the day I loaded in drums to get, you know, everything ready in the tracking room, Chris had his surgery that day. So, you know, we're all going, you know, we're like, oh my God. gosh, dude. You know, we're kind of freaking
out.
To
do it, yeah.
You know, obviously, you have positive hope. You know, you want to stay positive. But, I mean, there's always that feeling in the back of your mind. You're like, oh, my gosh, dude. Like, this is, you know, what if something went wrong? And Chris was worried, too. But he was really positive. And so he went in, got it done. He was out in, like, 45 minutes and came back home and was resting. And I remember the first day he came out of the studio, you know, he wasn't talking. And it's so funny because, you know, Chris and I in our band are like the, we're like, you know, push and pull. We've been together the longest. I've known him since kindergarten. You know,
wow, right.
Your school friends.
It's history,
you know?
Man. Yeah.
History, dude. So it's funny. So he's sitting there and, you know, he's like, can't talk. And I'm just like, oh, man, I could ream you so hard right now. You can't say anything. He's just, you know, smiling. And the first day that he's able to talk, he starts talking, and we could already tell his voice was just—it sounded totally like, you know, it sounded 10 years younger. We were like, "Man, like your voice—it sounds like you, but it sounds like you're fresh Chris, you know." And he's like, "I know, man. It's weird. It's almost like I drank from the fountain of youth." So the first day he goes to sing vocals, he goes in the vocal booth, and you know, we're all kind of like, gosh, okay, man, yeah, you know, ooh, you're gonna nail this, dude. Back from everybody's minds were like, oh, Jesus, man, please, please. So he opens that golden throat of his, dude. his voice sounds amazing, and it's still Chris. I mean, but it's just, I think that where we had toured so long and
just,
you know,
battering,
not relied,
yeah,
on any kind of backing tracks or anything like that, and Chris just he sings like Chris does, like a powerhouse. He gets in there and, like, I mean, it almost brought tears to your eyes because his voice sounded so rejuvenated. And I'll tell you, man, on this record, his voice sounds unreal. He's a monster. I mean, it sounds great. And we worked so hard on this record, man. We produced it and we analyzed every single part to the point where, you know, we were joking, you know, about, you know, how Mutt Lang did the Def Leppard records. And
yeah. To the point where you're driving yourself insane almost, right? But you've got to get it so perfect.
that's what we did. We drove ourselves nuts. I mean, it was, man. And, you know, but I'll tell you something. I think people are going to hear this record and be so happy because it's got a great mix of everything we've ever done. You know, the little, you know, traces of, you know, the debut record back in 06, and it's got, you know, some stuff that is reminiscent of folklore, and it sounds huge, and we're just super proud of it, man. It's some, actually, to tell you the truth, we wrote 4 songs on the back of the bus last year, and then a lot of the stuff are these hidden gems that we've never put on any albums up till now. And, you know, I know a lot of bands.
You mean like the odd riff here, the odd melody here, the odd lyric there?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, we've had, you know, it's crazy because we've got like a catalog of old songs that we never recorded. And it's, I think a lot of people, you know, feel like, oh man, you know, if it's an old song and you never used it, it must have not been any good. Well, no, it's the process of picking songs is so hard because you've only got, you know, when an artist does an album, you've only got pretty much, you know, 11 to 13, possibly 14 tracks, you know, that you can put on the album. You don't want to put just 9 or 10 because then, you know, everybody's like, man, that's not enough songs. But you don't want to put too many because then it, you know, it's kind of overkill. So a lot of these records we did in the past, we would do, you know, 25 to 30 songs, you know, for the album, you know, working really hard, writing with, you know, outside guys, writing with ourselves. And, you know, you narrow it down, you only get to pick, you know, 12 or 13 songs to the record. So what you're left with is you're left with maybe, you know, 8, 10 to 12 songs that you didn't get to put on the record. So we've had that stuff, you know, stockpiled, you know. And it's crazy because every time we put out a record, we're so proud of it. We're like, man, I wish we could have put that one more on there, you know. Mm-hmm. So this was the one where, honestly, I don't want anybody to think, you know, this is like, oh man, they just, you know, got lazy and put a bunch of old songs. No, these songs were
just a B-sides album, yeah.
Yeah, it's not that at all.
Well, I mean, also, really, what you have, John, is you have, like, you know, there's a riff or a part that maybe was not quite right for that one song at that time, and you then bring it into this new format, and you know, it's almost like the Frankenstein monster approach, isn't it? Of a song 13 years apart is going to be a completely different thing because you're at a different point in your life. The band sounds different, but maybe there's that one little hook or drum roll or whatever there that, you know, stands up now and has finally found its place, as it were.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better. You nailed it. It's that's exactly what we did. We did rock and roll Frankenstein surgery, and it came out unreal. I mean, I've been listening to our great friend Jordan, who is our live monitor engineer. He's a monster studio guy, and we ran into him a couple years back. He was touring with a great group of friends of ours, Shaman's Harvest, from here in the States. And so we kind of you know, stealing from time to time, but he oh my God, he's doing such a great job. We're listening to mixes right now. Like, I've got this you know, crazy, I don't even know if they make, do you remember this company that was in the 90s, like they made all the tape stuff? It was is it TDK? Yeah, like they made all the cassette tapes. So they came out with this right. Weird Bluetooth speaker, and okay. As crazy as it is, you know, like, I mean, you know, our cars now don't have, you know, CD players now.
Yeah.
So ours do, because we've got, you know, older models, but, you know, so we've been listening to that. But I've been listening on this Bluetooth speaker, and it's so crazy because, you know, I've been blaring it through the house, and you know, it's fun, man, listening to the mixes and it's a crazy time because, you know, obviously we can't you know, physically, you know, hang out with people, but for us it's been a big house party because we've been listening to all these mixes off the new record. And you know, I always judge if our album is good or not by if my kids like it, you
if
know,
they want to shake their hands and throw their arms around, and then it's a rocker.
That's the thing. And you know, you cannot, I've learned this with being a dad, you cannot make a kid like something. If they don't like it, yeah, they're going to tell you the truth.
And they're not going to pretend just to be nice. You know, they're not going to go, oh yeah, this is really good, Dad. Yeah. You know, their face is going to say it all.
Yep, that's the thing. I mean, when they get teenagers, I've got two, girls that are Scorpios, so I'm one of those tree hugging horoscope crazy, you know, hippies out here in the woods. So I believe fully in the horoscope, you know, life. And I'm telling you, man, my girls are they're wild. I mean, they're I imagine they're, you know, my dad goes, see, this is what happens. You know, you were so wild as a kid. This is what you get right now. You know.
Beautiful karma, dude. Let's break for your penultimate track. I was out in Vienna with my dad, well, my mum, dad, and sister last year, and I took my dad out to a bar, and we had this crazy night. We were drinking shots, and it was like this kind of rock and roll goth bar in the outskirts of Vienna, and me and my dad don't really do that often, and so we had this great night. And as we were leaving the pub, they were playing this song, and my dad, like in his drunken kind of slur, was like, when I die, you got to make this song like my funeral song. And I was like, well, that's heavy, but you know, that means that tonight has meant something to you, and I'll take that as, you know, a special moment that we've shared. And yeah, he was like, I want this song to be played at my funeral. And so it was already my favorite Stones track, and now because of that, you know, it has extra weight and symbolism and importance, and it's just a fucking bad boy song, isn't it, man?
Oh dude, listen, I'm glad you had that memory with your dad. I tell you, the memories you make with you know, with your family, with your dad, your mom, your grandparents, you know, I truly believe this. They make an impact on your soul, and you never forget them. You know, ever those magical memories. If it could be something as simple as, you know, a walk, you know, with each other, or sharing something to deal with music, or you know, I working in a shop on an old car. I mean, it's. Those things imprint in us for life, and they never leave us.
I believe,
you know,
that too.
And it's amazing. I mean, the Stones for me, you know, dude, it's really hard. I have a hard time deciding whether is Led Zeppelin my favorite rock and roll band, or is the Stones, or are the Stones. And I have to remind myself, well, okay, Led Zeppelin is the greatest rock band of all time. the Beatles were the greatest songwriters of all time, and the Rolling Stones were the best country rock band of all time. You know what I mean?
There you go. There you go.
To me, there's no, listen, they are, if anybody wants to argue that fact, please email me, because I truly believe the Stones, you know, I watched
Rhythm and Blues great. As well. They do that so well as well. You know, like Jumpin' Jack Flash, like straight up R&B rhythm and blues killer.
You know, we recorded on Family Tree, we recorded a version of Jumpin' Jack Flash, and we couldn't get it on the record because of some licensing trouble.
Oh, man.
And I was so friggin' bummed because, man, like, I was like, oh, man. It, you know, and it's a great track. I mean, the Stones have been a huge influence on us. And, you know, it's crazy because, like, you know, for me, listening to, you know, all the stuff they did, I mean, the early stuff and the later stuff, they're one of my favorite bands. I never got to see them live, and they're my bucket list. Like, seeing...
Yeah, me too. Okay, they're still doing it as well, thankfully, so hopefully we can still get our chance.
Oh, absolutely. Have you ever seen the Stones live?
Never, and I really want to. I need to. I have to.
I need to for my soul. You know, I mean, man, they are... You know, they've got to be, 77 and older? I mean, they're in better shape than I am, and I'm 35. You know, I always like that meme. It's like, it's Keith Richards, and it says, we got to start living a better, we got to start making the world a better place so that Keith Richards can have a nice place to live.
Yeah. You know, I know exactly the one you mean. We've got to start thinking about the world we're going to leave behind for Keith Richards, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. No, the Stones are incredible. I mean, I think that they're on my bucket list, man. Like, seeing Elton John,
me
the
too,
Stones,
dude. Yeah.
And Jeff Lynne live. You know, that's for me. That's it.
Thank you.
I want to pick your brain real quick about the new record. Just, is there anything you can tell us in terms of like lyrical subject matter, themes? Because I remember sitting down with you around, what's the album that had Soul Train on?
Soul Machine?
Soul Machine, sorry. Yeah.
Soul Train. That was a better title. Where were you at, man? Soul Machine was on Magic Mountain.
Magic Mountain.
Right? No, it wasn't.
No, it was one after that.
See, that right there proves to you that when you do albums, you lose track. Soul Machine, I don't know. I swear to you, that's crazy. Wait, let me look it up.
I think it was on the record after Magic Mountain.
That's how a musician's brain works right there. I'm literally on my iTunes. I can't.
And there's a song on there as well about the hangman's something, the hangman's noose or the hangman's jewelry.
Oh, hangman was on Kentucky.
Kentucky.
Was on Kentucky.
Then that's the record. I think Soul Machine was on Kentucky as well. I think.
Wait a minute. Hang on, let's make sure.
Let's get verification.
Yeah, it was on Kentucky.
There you go.
It was on Kentucky.
The journalist and the band member don't know. But
I'm telling you, you'd be surprised. You ask guys, hey man, what song is that? You're like, now listen, if Ben was here, Ben would be slapping me because Ben can remember every single
He's all over that.
Tour date. Man, you can ask the next time you're with us and hanging, ask Ben, say, Ben, where did you play in 2007, May 15th? And I'll lay a fresh $10 bill down that he can tell you where we were. It's insane. I'm going to hold you to that. Rolodex.
So we sat down in the Gibson guitar showrooms and we had like a little kind of conversation for an interview for, I guess, Metal Hammer or Classic Rock, one of those. And
yeah.
I remember talking to you about that record, and that for me was like the first time when you guys started getting political. Now, by that, I don't mean you were necessarily writing overtly political songs, but what you were writing about was being informed, perhaps for the first time, quite overtly and directly by the current climate of your country at that time.
Sure.
So in terms of what's been going on recently, has any of that fed into this record that's going to be coming out?
I think in the past, yeah, we've definitely, I mean, you know, even start, I guess it started on Between the Devil and the Deep Blue Sea with
right.
Change. You know, and you know, there's always been hints of I don't want to call it the political inspired songwriting that we do. I think more it's
social commentary, perhaps, right?
Yeah. Well, I think it's just like, you know, sometimes, man, the way we feel about things that are, you know, going on in the world, we can't not write about
injustices.
I think it's not a zeroed in direct thought about a particular politician or anything.
It's just kind of a
feeling that you get as being a human and having to live in a world that, you know, where things are just not as justified as they should be. I guess that's the best. That's the PC way to say it, right? Sounds like I'm running for office over here. But I think that we have been a band that's been pretty transparent in our songwriting. I mean, all four of us write the songs and the lyrics, and that's hard sometimes because, you know, it's wonderful because you have four different opinions and individual ideologies and beliefs and concerns and feelings, but also, you know, how do you make all those feelings into one song, you know, to make one point? And we're a special case because a lot of times in a band, you have maybe just a lead singer or the guitar player that writes all the lyrics and music. You know, as I know there's tons of groups that have that, but it's much easier for them because, you know, there's only two opinions or two thoughts, you know, or one that's going in the song. But with us, it's a collective. So, you know, sometimes we're writing lyrics and we're sitting there and, you know, you can tell the two guys that don't agree with the lyrics and the other two that are just like full force, like, yes, this is awesome. So we have to figure out how to make it work for everybody. I think on this new record, we've got songs that are just a wide spectrum. I think. You know, there's a couple, you know, songs that deal with, you know, Chris is, hey,
beautiful. She's like, you still on the phone, Dad?
Yeah, she's like, are you still on the phone? Well, they get in their you know, Moana outfits and their Frozen Elsa outfits and run around and freeze stuff. And so I'm really thankful I didn't get shot with just a frost beam right here, because I'd have had to, you know, stop the interview until I'm unfrozen. So, but I think that there's a lot of there's a lot of stuff. I mean, there's a couple songs where, you know, Chris, you know, jumps deep into you know, his dealings with his, you know, depression and how he deals with that. And he's a monster. You know, he made a choice to really help himself through some dark times, and we were right there with him. And you know, it's I guess sometimes, like, you know, I worry that, you know, we're you know, singing about maybe the same stuff sometimes, but I think that if those feelings are, you know, if you make different songs about the same feeling, it's like you can't help but sometimes feel that way, because, you know, those are things that are your life is about, you know. So I mean, there's songs on the record that are, man, just like, we call them barn burners, you know. They're just like, man, dude, that's like such a driving anthem. Like, you could, you know, get behind a motorcycle or a, you know, a car and just like just drive for miles listening to. So I think there's a great mix. I will say that for all the heavy fans out there, I don't want to give too much away. You know, I don't want to give too much away.
I feel you.
But I think that all the people that may have, you know, said, "Oh man, you guys got away from the heavy stuff," and I know, like, you know, we as a band, you know, we can't make the same record twice, and I wouldn't expect us to, you know. And but I think that the people that are out there that are the heavy fans of Black Stone Chariot are gonna appreciate this record a lot, because it's I think it's the heaviest record we've ever put out, honestly.
Boom.
You know, sonically, the lyrics, the just the playing and things, I mean, it's beautiful. I'm super proud of it, and it's really hard to you know, for me, it's kind of hard to talk about, you know, an album, because, you know, you always, like I said earlier, you don't want to make that album seem like, oh man, this is the greatest thing ever, and all our other records weren't, you know, this blows them away. It's not like that at all. It's just that this record is different, and it has hints and traces and of all the other records, you know, combined. But I think that this is definitely a newer sound for us. So I hope people dig it.
Well, you would also like to think that as a group, you're developing and maturing and evolving and improving every step of the way. And so, of course, you're going to feel like this new chapter is an improvement and a culmination of everything that you've done to date, because, you know, you're improving and you're getting better and you're growing. And right? Otherwise, you just are. We're the same band we were 10 years ago. We haven't progressed at all.
I think we're just the Ramones.
We're just going to do the same song forever, and that's great. But, you know, there's only a few bands that can do that. You know, AC/DC, Ramones. Maybe they're the only two that can just do the same record and time again.
That was going to be my next statement, man, is, you know, the bands that have done this, have stuck to their same formula for so many years, you know, that they do it so well, you know. And like AC/DC is a great example. You know, every record they ever put out, it's not that it was a carbon copy, but they stayed right on that same path. And I think some people expect that and want that, but, you know, with, you know, look at Led Zeppelin never ever made the same record twice, you know.
Yeah.
And I guess, yeah, we're growing, and we're, you know, as we get older, our topics that we write about are, you know, changing. You know, we don't have the same mindset we had when we were 21 years old. There's no way to go back to that. But also, we couldn't have wrote an album like this at 21. So, yeah, I just hope people love it. And you know, it's amazing that, to me, still we have fans that are all over the world. And it's, you know, I sometimes go, dang, man, like, you know, there's probably somebody right now listening to our record in, you know, Australia or England or Canada, and I'm out here putting wood in my outdoor firebox boiler right now with cow crap all over my muck boots. But it's, you know, that's the reality, you know, because we're all country boys, and it's like, it's mind blowing sometimes to think that, you know, a little band from Edmonton, Kentucky has done as well as we have, and we're very appreciative and thankful, and you know, look at the fans that we've made, you know, over in England, in your, you know, home. If you told me that we were gonna, you know, do what we did in England, I would have laughed at you, because it was just so crazy, you know. Remember the first time we ever went over? It was in 2007. We were rolling around in a little bitty Sprinter van, and you know, it's insane to see what we've been able to do because of the great people that have supported us.
And the great tunes you continue to make, and it couldn't have happened to a nicer bunch of guys, dude. You're the best. I've always loved you. You know that. And I hope it's not too long before you can get out there and start playing these new songs to real-life human beings in real life.
Oh, dude, Ben's going to have to go to live music therapy if we don't get to play somewhere. He's like, the other day at the studio, he goes, man, I don't know what I'm going to do. If we can't play shows, I'm going to lose my mind. And I think we're all feeling that, you know. I mean,
yeah.
We're treasuring our time with our family through this, you know, this horrific thing that's going on right now. But I think that in about a month, it's gonna hit us, and we're gonna be like, ooh, all right, you know. Because, I mean, obviously, you know, we had shows in April that, you know, were postponed. I mean, every touring act, artist, musician in the world right now has been hit by this. You know, I mean, let me rephrase that, everybody in the world has been hit by this. But just specifically speaking, in
our media industry, yeah,
in the music industry, I mean, we can't tour, you know, obviously, and so, you know, let's just all, you know, stay positive, and hopefully, you know, by, you know, I'm hoping by at least, you know, June or July, this stuff will be gone, and we can get on with living our lives, and like you said, you know, hopefully when we all come out of this. You know, I think the biggest thing we all need to remember is how we felt during this,
yep.
And keep that positivity and that love for life, and just like the common goal of, you know, being a human and being passionate and caring for others. You know, no matter, you know, where we all come from and our background differences, we need to try really hard to be, you know, be just better human beings, you know, and that's to each other, that's to the environment, that's, you know, to to everybody.
Amen, dude. What a pleasure catching up, my friend. Always.
Oh, my gosh, you kidding me? Look, man, I you know, I love you so much. You've been a great, great friend and brother to us, and, you know, I guess we can't go out drinking anymore. I guess we'll have to just like pull up two lawn chairs by the bus and drink like, you know, non-alcoholic margaritas. And well, you can. I'll take care of you. I'll be your designated driver.
I'm down. Well, one of the last things you said to me when I saw you that night in Camden, and you might not remember, but you said, "Dude, you got to come out. You got to come stay with me. You got to come see my house. You got to come chill." And one day, if the offer still stands, I would love to make that happen. And yeah, I'll sit on the porch with you all day long. You can drink your alcohol-free margaritas, and I'll have a little cool box of Miller Lite, and we'll just watch the world go by. I'd love that.
Matt, you are welcome at my home anytime, and I do remember saying that. I tell people all the time, I meet people, and they say, you know, man, you remember me? And I say, man, I'm gonna be honest with you. I never ever forget a face, and I'm pretty darn good with names too. I said I got a memory like an elephant, and I got an ass like one too. So I promise you, I'll remember you. Hey, I love you, man. You guys stay safe over there, and I'm so glad to get to talk to you. I'm glad you're okay. I hope all your family's great, and just to everybody listening, man, just try to stay positive and stay in your homes, and we'll all get through this thing, and we'll come out on the other side, you know, better. And yeah, man, let's get back to life.
Get back to the dancing days with Led Zeppelin.